I therefore call in the most strenuous terms on the government of Myanmar to put its people's lives first. It must do all that it can to prevent this disaster from becoming even more serious.
It's estimated that 78,000 people have died in Myanmar since the cyclone 2 weeks ago, more than 2 weeks ago. And that's Secretary General of the United Nations Ban Ki-moon calling for the government to allow international aid workers into the country. There's been a standoff, and 2.5 million people are in the balance. The United Nations is attempting to coordinate relief effort, but the Myanmar government is not allowing international workers in. The question is, what is to become of the 2.5 million people who are at risk of starvation and disease and further devastation from a natural disaster that took place more than 2 weeks ago? It's not a natural disaster anymore. It's definitely a man-made disaster. What's to happen now? Joining us now is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. Mr. Bolton, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
You are certainly a harsh critic of the United Nations. I'm wondering if the U.N. is being tested now, and do you have any reason to believe that the U.N. can coordinate some sort of intervention to get aid into Myanmar?
Well, certainly the reaction has been very slow, although, as you were saying, the government of Burma hasn't done anything to help. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will be going there this week. But once again, I think the UN agencies, the World Food Program and others, sat back for days waiting for the government of Burma to do something and didn't apply the kind of pressure perhaps they could have very early on. So the problem now, 2 weeks since the cyclone, is the after effects that could have been mitigated had the relief agencies gotten in earlier.
What are the protocols for the United Nations to intervene in a situation like that? Don't they have to wait to be invited? And what are the precedents for going in uninvited in a situation as dire as this?
Well, there really aren't any precedents like that. And, you know, we do have experience when you try and put in humanitarian relief efforts without having a system on the ground. Often you're just giving the relief supplies to thugs or to the government to distribute, in this case, to their own military. I think what should have been done is that the heads of the UN agency should have been in the media earlier and doing more to pressure the government of Burma that I don't think they were doing. But I do think the principal responsibility here lies with the military junta in Burma.
Mr. Ambassador, when you say that they could have done more, what do you think could have been done? Or more importantly, what do you think can be done now? I mean, one of the things that we heard from some of the World Food Program folks last week is that, for example, it was on his understanding that the General Secretary's phone calls were not even being returned from the military junta.
Right. I think that this is a probably a demonstration that the junta itself was badly damaged by this cyclone. But the main tactic that I think should have been used was more international attention and more effort to get through. Just because the phone doesn't work doesn't mean that you just sit there and do nothing. And I think this is precious time was lost. So I think really there's fault on both sides, the junta and the UN agencies.
Well, the alternative to UN intervention, of course, is unilateral intervention on the part of one of the larger powers. And Gordon Brown over the weekend expressed reluctance for Great Britain to go in. Do you have any suspicion that the United States has any sort of contingency to deliver aid above and over the heads of the Myanmar government?
Well, I think that's a very risky proposition for the United States or anybody else, which is why, although people talk about it, it doesn't actually happen. You know, to distribute the food, it's not just a question of offloading it at docks. You have to have a distribution network. You have to have some internal order. And I think what we can see is that the government of Burma was devastated by this and just simply wasn't able to respond. On the other hand, if they had said, look, we are devastated. You need to come in and help. I have no doubt the UN agencies, non-governmental organizations would have done that. But that also did not happen.
But the question is, what's the tipping point and who will constitute the force that really brings new, a whole new approach to dealing with the Myanmar government? And I'm wondering if the Bush administration perhaps bears some responsibility in the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan for a reluctance to unilaterally really go it alone in a place like Myanmar. There's just not the patience or tolerance for another intervention on the part of the U.S. military.
Well, I don't think that's it so much. You know, President Bush 41 intervened unilaterally in Somalia in November of 1992 because of the chaos there to try and open up lines of delivery for humanitarian supplies. He was prepared to get out fairly soon thereafter, the Clinton administration stayed in, and we had the tragedy of 18 Marines killed later in 1993, which I think has turned off the military and a lot of other people to that kind of unilateral intervention. And as I say, while there was a lot of rhetoric about it, I didn't see anybody else stepping up to the plate either.
And 2.5 million Burmese are just going to have to wait. The reluctance of the power, it just seems like there's no scenario going forward here.
Well, ask yourself this. What about the government of India? It's right next door. It's a bordering country. What did they do? What did the countries of the Association of Southeast Asia Nations, Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, what did they do? Nothing. China, which is Burma's largest patron, also essentially did nothing. And then it got hit by an earthquake. It's now lost perhaps as many as 50,000 people. So one can ask, what about the countries right there in the region, the bordering countries, the neighboring countries? They didn't do anything either.
Question. Mr. Ambassador, very, very, very quickly, just because we're running out of time, what do you think is the best case scenario in your mind that can happen moving forward from this second?
Well, I think if they can begin to get the relief supplies in, and the government of Burma has now said it will accept all international aid workers, hopefully to just to stabilize the situation so it doesn't get worse. The after effects of the cyclone, loss of clean water, lack of nutrition, spread of disease, those are the things to worry about now, and that requires a fairly urgent distribution of medicine and food and shelter.
So former Ambassador John Bolton, thank you very much for posing those questions, and we'll see if those scenarios come to pass in the next few days. Ambassador John Bolton, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we are following the situation in China and Burma, and we also are asking you our takeaway question today, which really comes out of an amazing conversation that Adora had with Pervez Sharma, a filmmaker who talks about contradictions among gays in the Muslim world, attempting to reconcile the apparent intolerance of their faith for their lifestyle. We're asking you on our website, what contradictions do you live with? And Jason on our website says, I've been changing a lot of things in my life to be more green. I've changed light bulbs. I've made the thermostat higher. But when I look at my mutual funds and stocks, my retirement is probably being funded by various companies that are not so green. That's an interesting contradiction.
And we've also gotten some responses on our SpinVox. So let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Greenberg, and I'm calling from Glen Ridge, New Jersey. I have a contradiction. I have three vehicles. One of them is a Chevy Suburban, which does not get particularly good gas mileage, although my wife and I do consider ourselves to be green. So I know that is a contradiction, but we also have four children, so we sort of need to have a larger vehicle. It is a contradiction, but we're trying to work with it.
My advice, since I have four children, get a Toyota minivan. It doesn't get great gas mileage, but it's better than a Suburban. Jack, the Martini Grace Cowboy, thanks for joining us.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Want to take us out, babe?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and also check out Jack's notes online. Yeah. He wrote up a critique of the Country Awards show last night.
The best review of the Country Music Awards. We asked for photos of your work's place in celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Cubicle. They're great. Go to our website and see them. Thanks so much. That's all for the takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.